This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. Hey, what's the one thing that liberal and conservative parents can agree on? It's that kids these days are spoiled, right? But are they actually spoiled? So the new generation of kids is hitting the workplace and they're being called coddled and lazy and entitled and narcissistic. So it's pretty easy to put the blame on parents, of course, right? All the helicopter parents and that sort of thing. But is a pampered approach to parenting really ruining those future generations? And is the only solution for parents to take off the kid gloves when it comes to discipline? Well, maybe not. According to educational innovator and expert Alfie Cohen, people have been complaining about pushover parents and coddled kids for more than 1,000 years. I mean, literally more than 1,000 years. And according to Cohen, there is absolutely no evidence that either phenomenon is especially widespread today or that it's more common than in previous generations. Oh, and to top it off, there's a lot of new research now that reveals that helicopter parenting is actually quite rare and surprisingly may do more good than harm when it does happen. It turns out that the biggest threat to child development is actually parenting that's too controlling instead of too indulgent. We'll jump into all that and a lot more when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this from the MrDad.com radio network.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of the show is Alfie Cohn, who's the author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. Alfie, thanks for being on the show with us.
My pleasure.
You were actually here to talk about the homework myth a few years ago, which was similarly, I want to say inflammatory, but in a good way, thought-provoking. So, you know, we talk so much about coddled kids and narcissistic kids and kids these days and helicopter parents and parents who are not disciplining their kids. And it's, I got to say, so refreshing to hear somebody take a contrary view of this whole thing. Where did you come up with the thinking or the evidence, I guess, to show that maybe all the stuff we've been saying about kids and parents is not right?
I guess I began by asking where the evidence was to support these propositions that we so commonly hear. After all, the burden of proof is on people who make a statement like that to show that there's more than just a personal anecdote or two to validate the belief. And there isn't. I start the book, in fact, by citing some of the books and articles in the last few years that claim that kids are spoiled and entitled. They have inflated self-esteem, and the parents are permissive and don't set limits, unlike the good old days. And then I back up a couple of decades and show that people were saying exactly the same thing then, and I back up a few more decades and so on. So not only is there no evidence at present to show that these things are true, but people have been saying exactly the same thing in italicized voices. Forever, basically.
Well, Plato had something to say about that, I think. There was some, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was basically kids these days.
Yeah, I quote that one too, and also Hesiod from a couple thousand years ago. So what interests me more then is why people are so open to this, why we want to think the worst of kids, and why criticism of parents typically is not for their being over-controlling, which I think is a reasonable criticism in this culture, but exactly the opposite, that they're too permissive. And yet, strangely, at the same time, we hear that parents are also over-parenting. They're helicopter parents. They're doing too much for their kids at the same time that they're supposedly not doing enough. Anything that supports this general conservative narrative that's challenging to kids and basically disparaging of kids, and more pushing parents to be even more traditional than they already are, seems to get a pass.
Yeah.
Even if it's unsupported, and even if two different accusations are difficult to reconcile with each other.
But it sounds like you're saying that the idea of the tiger parenting thing might be accurate.
Well, tiger parenting is sort of a subset of control in which children's emotional needs are waved aside, and that the parent is not only being very controlling, but doing so in a very narrow attempt to boost achievement at any cost. There are some parents, I don't know how many, I don't think anyone does, who fit that. That troubles me more. What I see around me and what I think some of the research tends to support is that parents are so afraid of being thought permissive by friends and relatives and even complete strangers, that they overcompensate by being over-controlling. But what drove me, I think, finally to write The Myth of the Spoiled Child is that a whole cluster of conservative beliefs, and there are others we haven't talked about yet, are uncritically endorsed and repeated, even by people who are politically speaking liberal or at least centrist. People across the political spectrum suddenly sound like they're on Fox News when the conversation turns to children and parenting, which I find fascinating and disturbing.
Now, you take Jean Twenge to task here quite a bit. She was the author of Generation Me, and we've actually had her on the show to talk about that. Talk about how you began to, I guess, figure out that what she was talking about just wasn't there. I mean, you've talked about
the lack
of research.
Over the last few years, every time you see an article in a newspaper or a Newsweekly that says something negative about kids, little kids or young adults or anything in between, that they think too highly of themselves, that they're more narcissistic than kids used to be, anything, it's always a Jean Twenge study. She's basically a one-woman factory churning out a disparagement of kids. And the media eat it up because here's somebody allegedly with data to support the very myths about kids that they themselves have been publishing for years. But when experts in data analysis and other psychological researchers looked at her claims more carefully, they melted away. When they looked at her own data sets with more sophisticated methodological approaches, when they used other data sets, when they tried to replicate her work, none of it stood up. And you can tell where she's coming from if you read her books, not just her journal articles, because she's a profoundly right-wing thinker about children, about education, and so on, driving the same myths that we hear about, that the same sensibility that kids need less self-esteem and more self-discipline and we need to go back to basics in school and all the rest of that stuff. That's where this is coming from. When you look at it objectively as a social scientist, there's really nothing to her claims except her ideology.
Right.
And yet virtually nobody in the popular press is saying that this particular emperor is naked. And when Twenge's numbers are gone, missing from the equation, there is literally not a single study to support the claim that kids today not only are more narcissistic, but have higher self-esteem, think too highly of themselves compared to the way people thought in previous generations.
All right, so here's the big question, at least one big question I can think of at this particular moment. So what, one could ask, right? I mean, is there any harm that's being done to anybody by having this particular approach about parents and kids?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, kids themselves hear this constant disparagement, and it can turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy when you hear constantly that you have a sense of entitlement and you're self-centered and you should have had more limits and you're not going to know how to cope with the real world because you've been coddled your whole life. If you take that seriously, like anyone else, you may come to believe it, just like a negative ad campaign in an election can cause people to believe certain claims about a politician, even if there's no factual basis. But I think it poisons the well more generally in our society. And it also leads parents to become even more controlling and even more worried about being permissive and supporting kids' autonomy and promoting their psychological needs. Because, you know, especially when you're out in public, you're more likely to be criticized for not sufficiently controlling your child. Rarely are you criticized, or do you get dirty looks for being too controlling?
That's interesting. I'm kind of wondering about the politics of this, because you talked about right and permissive and liberal, and you know, there tends to be a piling on, and I'm not taking a position on this one way or the other, but this is kind of sounding a little bit like the pushback that is coming in this particular case from the right about climate change. Everybody says climate change is whatever it is, and then there are a few voices that say no, it isn't, and those people feel that they're being stomped on by other people who don't want to hear conflicting opinions. Is there a parallel here, do you think?
I would have to be persuaded of one. I'm not seeing it yet, frankly. In the case of climate change, it's not just a matter of how many people believe something, but what good science supports. There are virtually no respectable scientists who deny it. There's, you know, a few right-wing think tanks supported by energy companies. So that's not a matter of saying, let's get on board because it's just a popular view to hold.
Right. Okay.
In this case, I don't think you find that there's good science supporting what most people believe about parents and children.
Alfie Cohen is the author of The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Alfie Cohen and get into a little bit more detail about what it is that we can do to overcome all this. I'm Armin Brott, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up. I shouldn't be afraid to get on the school bus.
To turn on my computer.
Message. A lock to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Salagadoola, metrigaboola, bibbidi bobbidi.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh. That does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream. A wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
I'm inspired to serve my community based on the fact that I get so much back from it.
Ken Wyben, USO volunteer.
This is a great country, and if people were to go ahead and step up to the plate by volunteering or doing something for their fellow man, this country will be greater than it ever was.
Lead, inspire, change the world again. Join thousands and find which volunteer opportunity is best for you. Call 1-800-424-8867 today.
or visit www.getinvolved.gov. This message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service on this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Alfie Cohen about his new book, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom About Children and Parenting. So I think we got a pretty good groundwork laid here about the lack of evidence and what that's doing. So what is it that we can do to overcome this, and how are we going to go about it, and what do you think the effects are going to be?
Well, the first thing to do, of course, is to educate yourself and to be skeptical about claims, including mine, and ask what is the value position and what are the data, if any, to support a given claim. So that when people say, for example, that kids today get trophies and good grades and praise too easily, I think it makes sense to pause and ask, why do you think that's true, and why does it bother you so much? And then at that point, we can begin by asking the question that I think ought to animate most how-to parenting books. That's not what this one is. I wrote one like that some years ago called Unconditional Parenting. But the question that I think ought to animate such authors is, what do kids need, and how can we meet those needs? But instead, I think most parenting books and articles and seminars are driven by a different question, which is, how can I get my kid to do whatever I tell him? And there are some people who use old-fashioned, crude techniques, training kids as if they were pets and threatening them. And other people use newfangled and new-agey approaches, but the goal is still compliance, whether you're using, you know, spanking on the one hand or saying, good job, when your kid does whatever you want on the other. The goal is still mindless obedience. And I argue that that's problematic in various ways. In fact, at the end of this new book, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, I argue that even if it were true that too many young people are self-centered, the alternative wouldn't be compliance and traditional discipline to get it. It would be helping kids to become skeptical, to ask questions, to develop in them, help them to develop a sense of social justice and act on their native concerns about fairness. So we raise, in effect, a generation who are reflective rebels. That would help people move beyond themselves to look at the well-being of others. And frankly, even if the premise about kids being more self-centered than kids used to be isn't true, and I don't think it is, I think that's still a pretty good goal.
You know, there was a study, or a couple of studies, I think, that came out kind of late last year about the Gen Y, the millennials, and taking a bit of a contrarian tone, and the study apparently found that millennials are actually quite altruistic and quite generous when it comes to donating to charitable causes. That didn't get a whole lot of play. And I'm kind of want to go back to what you were talking about the lack of evidence supporting the narcissistic business. Why is that so powerful if there's nothing there?
Part of it, I think, is that older people, as we started by saying a few minutes ago, always roll their eyes about young people being too focused on themselves. It's a belief that we come in with, and so we notice articles in the newspaper or events in our daily lives that conform to and confirm what we already believe. And it may be the case that young people seem more focused on themselves than older people. I'm not sure it's true, but if it is true, it's probably always been true. But we mistake a cohort change, which is to say a difference in the group of people around now, for the group of people, you know, 20, 50, 100 years ago, what is really a developmental change, so that younger people change as they grow older. But people who are older now look at younger people and say, things are getting worse, these young people are more self-centered, and so on, and dismiss evidence to the contrary. I think that's probably always been true, and that's why it's so useful, I think, to show evidence that the very same things people are talking about now were talked about a long time ago, each claiming it's never been as bad. I mean, you know, it's almost too easy, like shooting fish in a barrel, to offer these quotations that look like they came from last week's Time magazine, and then to reveal they came from, you know, a magazine 100 years ago. The point is, you can do, I almost roll my own eyes while I'm doing this, because it seems like a contrived, you know, even cliched rhetorical device. But the reality is that if you understand the significance of it, it merely means that all of these people with this, from this grouchy, wistful school of aggressive nostalgia, ought to shut up and sit down hard.
I mean, it kind of raises the question about if this is all true, and I'm kind of inclined to believe what you're saying, of course, that there isn't so much of an evidence that kids are narcissistic or that parents are overly permissive. So that would kind of mean that things are pretty much the same as they have been for thousands of years. So is there any sense in having parenting books that say do this or do that, as because if things are going to be the same, I mean, with the thousands of parenting books that are out there, and I've certainly contributed more than my fair share to that, what's the point, basically?
Well, I think it would be presumptuous for you or for me or any individual parenting author to think that we can single-handedly change an entire generation, that we can move the needle on aggregate results looking at an entire population. What we can do, hopefully, is make things a little different for the individuals who read our books. And that's what we try to do, reach as many people as we can. I think that a humanistic or more what I call a working with approach to raising kids instead of a doing to approach has always been in the minority. And it may be for some time, but I'm going to do what I can to reach as many people as possible. What has always been true, by the way, when you talk about generalizations of being other-focused versus self-focused or whatever, is that there's far greater variation within any generation of millennials or Generation X or baby boomers than there is a difference from one cohort to the next. That's why, you know, I think to be consistent, we have to be as skeptical about claims that millennials are more altruistic as about claims that millennials are more selfish or ill-prepared for the workplace or whatever, lazy. You're talking about 80 million people here, and I think that these generalizations tend to say more about the people who are making them than they do about the people about whom they're made.
I think as humans, we have kind of a natural inclination to want to be told where to go and what to do. I think there's certainly going to be plenty of people who are not within that particular box, and they're going to be out there at the forefront or, you know, thinking creatively or thinking outside the box. But so what do you tell to the majority of people who are looking for direction in some way? Where do you go? How do you assess the validity of somebody's claims? Because most people are not going to have access to the kind of research that you do, or the methodological ways of doing things, or the data crunching.
Where does your average bear go?
Book
for people who aren't going to go through the library stacks themselves. And, of course, I include hundreds of citations, so people who are so inclined can follow that up. But I think I'm not sure how many people are desperately concerned to learn empirical truths about what we know about what actually is true of parents right now or kids or what's been true historically. People are, I hope, thoughtful parents are thinking about what they can do to help their kids. And thus, our question becomes, what are your long-term goals for the kind of people your kids become? This is the question I always ask at the beginning of my lectures and workshops. And everywhere I go, I get the same kind of answers from people. Ultimately, I'd like my kid to be happy, fulfilled, creative, a critical thinker, responsible, compassionate and caring, independent, self-sufficient, and so on, lifelong learner. And then the question becomes, I think, how does what we do with our kids on a given Thursday evening square with what we would love to see our child become ultimately? And it's where those two pull in opposite directions that things get dicey and fascinating.
Alfie Cohn is the author of the new book, The Myth of the Spoiled Child, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom about Children and Parenting. Alfie, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and it's time for another Parents at Play segment with Sam Fuse. And you and I have talked about this before. The company B-Toys, and their website is mybtoys.com. They produce some of the most beautiful, functional toys that there are out there. I think, anyway, and it seems like you agree with that, don't they?
I absolutely loved these toys. I didn't even realize how many things they made.
I didn't either. Boy, they sent, I mean, it was just unbelievable, the variety of for all different sorts of ages. And so I wanted to talk about some of these. And, you know, we try to come up with themes for each column. And I was thinking, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in this among the products that they sent that were kind of like little kid versions of things that adults do. And this is not like tablets for kids. This is sort of even for younger kids than that.
Right.
And so one of the first ones was the Alphaberry. And they always come up with these great, I think they're really clever
names for
things. I actually
like that name.
It's
really cute.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, it's kind of like you think of the Blackberry, but this
right.
is the Alphaberry. And it looks like a phone in a way. And it has a tiny little screen, which doesn't really make any difference. But you can push all the letters, all the different keys. Each key's got a different letter. And it makes sounds, and it actually does words if you make the right combinations of letters. And it's a really fun way for little kids to kind of act like mom and dad and hold this thing up to their ear, and it talks to them a little bit. And
really for parents to stop handing kids their iPhones, too.
Well, you know, that's – I was just going to say something, because they say that the age range is roughly 18 months to 5 years, and we were just talking about this before. I don't think 5 years is going to work. I think it's going to be like 3 years.
Yeah, I think tops 3 years.
So then there was the Okie Dokie Okie. I think is what is how it's pronounced,
it,
which is like
I thought it was
you
know, okie dokie.
It's like karaoke.
You need to put pronunciation guides on them.
Well, I was thinking it had to end with okie because I think it's playing on karaoke.
Oh, okie dokie. Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you're so smart.
So it's a microphone, mm-hmm. and it has just a very few little functions on it. One of the buttons you push, and it allows you to amplify your voice. And then there's another one where that produces certain kinds of songs, and you can sing along with it. And then there's another one where you can record yourself and then play it back. It's just kind of a fun way for kids to have a in the spotlight sort of moment. And they come in all sorts of different colors. And again, just I think for those little kids, 18 months to 5 years, they're saying this one maybe could go to 5 years because there really isn't
yeah.
a competitive
adult
product.
There's all these TV
product.
Shows on where the kids are rock stars, so I think that would be
yeah.
really fun for a lot of maybe even older than 5 year olds. And next month is National Karaoke Month, so in case you want to get your dancing pants on.
Okay, so here's another one, another clever title from B-Toys, Elemento Squeeze. This is a set of alphabet blocks. And
these
they
are beautiful.
Stack.
I wish I had these when my son was little.
They are fantastic, and they stack. They're sturdy. They're soft, so if you do have a little kid who's building something and falls over on it, which is something that, of course, they do a lot, quite a lot, they're not going to hurt themselves.
One thing that I actually thought was cute about these blocks was that they were bathtub safe. My favorite thing about Legos was, all right, you don't want to stop, we'll bring it into the bathtub with you. They'll dry. And these two, bring them in the bathtub. You don't want to stop, that's fine. Grab them, bring them into the bathtub. You can play with them there.
All right. So you can get a lot of reviews of a lot of other things from B-Toys and many, many other manufacturers at parentsatplay.com. I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.